welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we're watching TCM4, The Next Generation, as picked by Scott for some reason.
There's one very specific reason, and he's on the show today.
So we're joined by Kyle. Originally, we were all hanging out together last week, and we're going to record this live. And if you want to know more about that, you should subscribe to our Patreon account, because we're going to talk about why we were all in Pennsylvania together last week on there. So that would be for anybody who donates $5. So, yeah.
Why don't you get on that?
Get on that. But Scott picked this basically because we just wanted to have Kyle on, because if you remember way back when, Kyle said if we ever picked this, he would take over the show and demand to be on it so that he could defend it. And you know what?
Got your wish, bitch.
Because, man, I have so many notes that just say I hate so much about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say this. No matter how awful this movie or any of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies can get, every time the opening narration starts, I get hype. I love how they all start with that scroll text and the voiceover where I'm like, oh man, we're about to see a real story. Shit's about to get crazy.
Yep.
And like it has that. And then there's a few things early on that I think are cool. It has this reference to the original movie with the prom photo being taken. And it's the noise from the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre as the photos are being taken as an homage to the opening, which is cool because this was written by the writer of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Which is so confusing to me.
Yeah, written and directed by.
Did he do anything else?
He got into cocaine way later in his career.
This is awesome! Like, he's just like freaking out. He's like, Matthew McConaughey, get me more coke. I'll put you in a movie.
I mean, Matthew McConaughey is the one person I have no real gripes with, because he is given 110% in this movie, even though he clearly knows it's trash.
Yeah, but they not allowed to bill them, so they put their faces on the cover.
Well, so they made
I've never seen one with their name on the cover, with their faces on the cover.
The one that I saw is like literally, it's like
it's just their faces.
And Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey, because like this movie was ready to come out after they got big.
Well, that was the thing. They shot this, I want to say, in 1990 or 1991.
Holy and then it basically
just sat on a shelf. And then Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey started to blow up as actors. And then they were going to release it. And that's when the lawyers were trying to stop it from coming out. Because they're like, you're going to ruin the credibility of our people.
And it's just like, I mean, I don't know. I think that's just such a cop-out. Like, I know, I understand that if everybody doesn't like it, and that's fine. And I'm sure that Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey didn't like it either, and that's fine. But, like, you make something and put it out into the world, and you just have to deal with it, like, afterward. Like, you just have to deal. That's your job.
You gotta be like Sandra Bullock. You know what I mean? Like, Sandra Bullock was nominated for an Oscar and a Razzie the same year and attended both ceremonies.
Wait, what was her Oscar for?
I forget what the Oscar was, but the Razzie was for All About Steve, and she showed up to the Razzie ceremony and handed everybody in attendance a copy of All About Steve and begged them to give it a second chance.
You know, and fucking good for her, because, like, I also, like, full disclosure, I hate the idea of the Razzies, because it's also, like, so, I recently watched The Pirate Movie, which was a movie, which is a musical from, like, 87. And the actress won the Razzie and for that. And it's like, she didn't act poorly. The movie was just crazy. And that's not her fault.
Like, I feel like the Razzies are like the bullies awards.
Yeah.
Look at these assholes following their dreams.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, this movie was bad, so let's shame everyone that was involved in it publicly.
Yeah.
What's funny is that Renee Zellweger has spoken highly of this movie. She was like, you know what?
What?
Like, it's a movie I did and it was fun. Like, she was like, I had fun making that movie.
It was fun!
But she seems so emotionless throughout the whole movie. Like, she seems like she's the one phoning it in. And she's the one that's like, nah, that was a blast. And Matthew McConaughey is the one that seems like he's going 110%. And he's like, ugh, I wish I'd never done it.
Really? Is that his takeaway? That's his soundbite about
I'm guessing they, so. Yeah, I mean.
They said Hal was fucking shooting TCM Next Generation. He said, I don't know. It was all right, all right, all right.
That's dude, and we have an all right, all right, all right in this movie.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
You know what else we have? We have someone that's so – I get the beginning where it's like, all right, I'm going to pay homage to the original. But who do you think you are shooting Texas Chainsaw Massacre Next Generation and being like, you know who I need to pay homage to? Alfred Hitchcock. Let's do the North by Northwest scene. Let's let's do that because this movie's on par with that movie.
Wait, what's the North by Northwest scene? Because I've never
seen the plane coming down in the field.
Oh, that's what that is? Because yes. I have never understood why that happened.
It's like direct from North by Northwest.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a parody or paying homage. I'm hoping it's a parody.
It's a parody because this movie is so,
like a parody on itself.
It's so meta. It's like an onion of sarcasm, and I can't handle it. Because here's a direct quote, and I actually have a screenshot that I will post in the group. And I've been sitting on this post or this screenshot that I took when I was watching it. I've been sitting on it for a couple months now, because maybe a month and a half at this point, but still long time. It's been on my desktop, so I hope that Megan has not like come to my desk and been like, "Why do you have a screenshot from a movie where the subtitle is Girls Have Tits?"
So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves with that.
Because they do, Scott!
The first thing that made me realize, wow, this movie was made for cheap, is that they are at the quietest school dance in the history of anything.
It's prom, like, please.
It's just, there's a strobe light in there, no music. And maybe three people coming in and out of the doors. And that's the whole prom scene. We're introduced to Barry, who's such a character of a douchebag that it borders on laughable at this point.
Yeah, but is he also the one that was like kissing another girl? And he's like, oh, baby, you did nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, baby, you won't give me the HJs. So I had to go to another source. I outsourced the HJs, but I love you.
Which I get to an extent. When you don't get an HJ, you have to outsource it.
Yeah.
But you have to outsource it to yourself. That's what I do. It's like, you know what? Jade isn't giving me what I want. I'm going to go in the bathroom, but not the one connected to our room, the guest bathroom. Don't ask questions. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Hey, man, self-employment is sort of a big deal now. It's so social economy is huge.
The dialogue in this car scene where this girl is giving
iconic.
This, wouldn't it be crazy if we just like died in the car crash? She turns into trash from Return of Living Dead for a second.
Do you ever fantasize about the worst ways of dying?
Dude, it's so ahead of its time because like she looks like she should be like a popular girl and all the popular girls love dying now. It's great. Like, it's so in vogue to like dying and to want to be dead that she's super cool. It's ahead of its time, you guys.
So before we get into another thing that girl says, the asshole douchebag goes, I kissed you once. What's wrong with that? It's like I can't even talk to my friends anymore. I can't believe how possessive you are. Okay, before they have that accident and they're walking around and the girl's like, I told you, I'm a bitch. It's just so that you get to like me. I just want people to like me, so I'm a bitch.
She goes, I'm a bitch like my mother.
Yeah, yeah. But the other woman who, what's her name? The adult woman that is in cahoots with Matthew McConaughey. Oh,
That flashes the boobs at the teenagers. They're always coming around trying to see my boobs.
Yeah, but she goes, fake is $3 bills, but it changed my life.
Kyle's in love with this.
I don't understand your problem. This is all great.
I do love the actor who has one line. It's after he gets in the car accident. He just comes out of the car and goes, I'm not hurt. And then he falls down.
Yeah. Yeah. Matthew McConaughey is like, so the other guy's like, I think he's hurt. I think he's dying. And he goes, no, he's not dead. And then he cracks his neck and you're like, oh, real shit. And he goes, first I'm going to kill you, but it ain't no biggie. Of course, it's different for every individual. And then that's when the girl's like, I told you I'm a bitch. And then she's talking about Renee Zellweger. And this is another crazy line. She goes, I've had PE with her. She's got a body to die for. And then the guy's like, hey, I got an idea. Because they get to the house and he goes, she's like, I can't get in. And he goes, but I have to pee or something like that. And he goes, hey, I have an idea. I'll go check, bitch. You're a bona fide moron.
Well, there's a point where they do. I have it written down that one of them briefly escapes based on the old psych move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the girl that we're talking about.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, no, that's fine. Psych! Like, runs
off.
I just think that this movie is so, it's so meta, but the tone is so fucked that, I don't understand. I don't understand anything.
It gets uncomfortable at points, man. They beat the shit out of Renee Zellweger at certain points.
They do.
And I was just like, holy shit, that's uncomfortable to watch.
It is for sure. A little mean-spirited.
Yeah, but this movie... Okay, so this movie is super mean and super meta, but it never feels like they're actually having fun on screen. And I think that's my only real gripe with it.
Well, and that's... So here's the one note that I wrote that I still feel the strongest about, is I wrote, all of these characters are insane, but none of them are interesting. And it feels like the writer missed what made people love the original movie, was that these characters... As insane as they were, you were super captivated by every single one of them. If you remove Matthew McConaughey from this movie, none of these characters are nearly as like memorable as any of the family in the first movie.
Except Leatherface.
I mean, Leatherface going full drag queen by the end of this movie is
pretty
definitely
funny.
Interesting.
They're pretty
but
funny.
Like,
beautiful.
I mean, the makeup scene in general is just so strange in this movie.
Yeah. But no, I will. You're right. Like, no other character really stands out. Renee Zellweger, I think, only stands out because of her look and demeanor, but like nothing. But it also just could be because we know it's Renee Zellweger. You know what I mean? It could just be because we know that it's her. But like the glasses and like just sort of like the grunge-ish look is sort of stand like the grunge at prom look sort of stands out. But I think it's hard to know because of the history of just knowing that it's Zellweger, because nobody else
stands
out at all except that kid who got into the car accident and said, "I'm fine." He looked like the Terminator from the American Pie movies.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, it's just like, it's kind of one big remember when.
Yeah.
Like, everything in the movie is just like, remember when we did this in the 70s? And it's like, yeah.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Wish I was watching that.
So here's a really interesting reference I just want to make a reference to my favorite Halloween movie, Halloween 4, which has a better rooftop chase scene than the one in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Next Generation.
I am a big fan of Matthew McConaughey shooting a gun and then celebrating like he's a sand person.
Yes.
Like, lifting the gun and he's like,
yeah.
No.
The sand people scare easily, but they'll be back in greater numbers. And so will Matthew McConaughey, apparently.
You know, they do the dinner room scene with all the corpses, which is, you know, I liked that. I thought that was kind of a nice little twist because I don't remember the corpses in the previous movies. It was always just the crazy family.
Yeah.
When Grandpa wakes up.
Yeah, he just wakes up.
Because I thought he was just going to be dead. And he just like, how are you still alive from 1974 to 1994? You were already old as shit back then.
The best line delivery in this whole movie, though, like genuinely, is when Renee Zellweger finally snaps and she's like making her way out of the house, and then Leatherface stands up and she just points at him and goes, "You sit the fuck down."
Yeah,
and
I wrote that down.
Just sits down. I was like, that's brilliant. I feel like beyond all the issues that I have with this movie, the Man in Black stuff is just so fucking stupid and convoluted. Like,
okay, so that's what I want to get in. And this actually ties directly into... Huh. Yeah, damn, shut up.
Sit the fuck down.
And I am not upset.
Okay, so this Man in Black, the guy in black who is Kmart Judd Nelson. Did you know that the Illuminati's body is a roadmap of pain?
But yeah, I don't know. I hate this whole concept. That's like, oh, the government's well aware of these people, but like,
no, they control the Illuminati controls the government, and they also control this random hillbilly family. I think that was supposed to be very meta and tongue in cheek, but I just don't think that it really hit.
I don't think it, I think you guys are being too kind by saying this movie was trying to be meta. I truly think they were trying to make a good movie.
I mean, I think you can try to make a good movie and also try to be meta at the same time, and you can fail at both.
Like, this is more, what's it? No, Smiley was definitely trying to be meta, but
yeah,
I think that they were trying to make a true horror movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I think they definitely were, but I think you can try to make a true horror movie while still being kind of satirical and meta. Like, you have to remember that Tobe Hooper made Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 because he was upset that people didn't realize that the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a comedy. Like, that's the mindset of both of the people who made that movie, was that they were writing a comedy. So
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, he felt like people missed all of the humor that was in that movie because thought it was so absurd. Like, he's like, the whole concept is so absurd. Okay. And he's like, but no one laughs. They're terrified.
I still think that the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre is really intense. I see the comedy, like the absurdity of it, as making it more intense and more frightening because people are so unhinged. But I mean, TCM2 is very obviously a comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that that's the whole thing. Like, because there are, when you rewatch it, you do find that there are these weird comedic beats that are in that movie, and they have no place in that movie. But if you think, oh, they were trying to make this a comedy, it's like, okay, well, then that is less out of, like, when the guy's yelling at Leatherface, and like Leatherface keeps pointing at, he's like, did you finish the dinner? And he like points at the dinner, and he's like, oh, did you blah, blah, blah? And he's like, well, you broke the goddamn door. Like, it's just like, like, it's just supposed to be like this weird, like, they're just fucking weird. It's the whole concept of Texas Chainsaw Massacre is weird. And like, the saying it's based on true story is very similar to like the Fargo concept of like, we're just going to say it's based on true story because it's so insane that no one could possibly believe that anyway. And then people are like, yo, did you know Fargo is based on true story? And it's like, no, it's not. It's not based on anything.
Yeah. Well, like, do people actually believe that?
I thought Fargo was, what's it called? Their basis for that was that based on a true story is a genre.
Yeah, like that was the joke, was like, we're doing a based on true story genre with something that's not based on a true story.
like
people really believe, like, there were people that were like, yeah, I can't believe someone really shoved someone into a wood chipper like that. And it's like, no, you idiot.
Like, I mean, I'm sure someone did.
Oh, I'm sure people
did. I wasn't trying to argue that personally.
Yeah, but back to the movie, Renee Zellweger escapes because Matthew McConaughey's stupid fucking leg plot device breaks.
Oh, so ridiculous.
Technology sucks.
That hasn't changed in the 25 years since this came out or whatever it is. But I will say, one of the things that did get a big smile on my face is the whole RV attack scene is just bonkers.
Oh, yeah.
In like the best way. Like, that's like one of the highlights in this movie. This movie has like maybe 3 or 4 highlights, most of them never lasting more than about 5 seconds, but that one's probably the longest highlight.
It's because it's, I don't know, I'm now thinking about what Brian said here, where they're like, I mean, yes, the meta and trying to be a good movie, I think, do go hand in hand, but it's like, and also, but to relate what you said about Tobe Hooper being bummed that like people didn't know it was a comedy, I think it's like Kim Henkel here didn't get his comeuppance for his part in Texas Chainsaw, or I think he probably doesn't think he got his like way or whatever. You know, Tobe gets to go and make Texas Chainsaw 2 to sort of like heal the wounds or try to bring up the reputation that was made from the first one. So it's like Kim Henkel goes out and tries to like rebuild some sort of, or fill the holes of the reputation for his part in Texas Chainsaw. And this is what we fucking get. And again, I'm not like, I love the movie and I have a great time watching it. And I don't think you guys, well, you might tell me later that you absolutely hated watching it, but from just the conversation that we're having, it sounds like y'all needed to see it again at least once and then never need to see it again.
Listen, I've seen it 3 times, and that's 3 times too many.
Yeah.
And don't let Matt deter you, okay? Because all he kept throwing out were technicalities. So you can still be on that set. I was like, I think that they were just like really trying to make a good movie. Well, there's good movies that are meta. Yeah, yeah, but they were trying to make like a horror movie. Well, you can make a horror movie and make it meta. They're trying to make a scary movie. Well, scary movies are meta too. God damn it.
So and I think that like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is an interesting thing to discuss in its own right, because Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a lot of ways is kind of like the horror version of Clerks. And what I mean by that is like it was that hyper low budget movie where, because it became this unexpected hit, I think a lot of people walked away from it that were in it with negative feelings, because at the end of the day, the person who benefited the most from Clerks was Kevin Smith. The person who benefited the most from Texas Chainsaw Massacre was Tobe Hooper. And all these other people who acted in it or, you know, helped write it or whatever kind of got stuck in this, like, that's all they're known for thing. Whereas Tobe and Kevin Smith both got to, like, have careers. I know that there are actors from Texas Chainsaw Massacre that to this day hold a beef with Tobe Hooper because of that. And same with, like, Kevin Smith. Like, some of the people from Clerks still won't talk to Kevin Smith because they feel like, well, when he got big, he should have brought all of us with him type attitude. Sure. So I think that it's kind of interesting that we're talking about it in that way, because this movie does feel like when you see those other actors from Clerks just kind of appearing in like schlocky Clerks-esque stuff because that's all they can do anymore. It's very sad.
So,
and in that sense, this is a great movie.
I have one. I was letting you get through that before I argue with you, but I have a real hard time feeling bad for people, be it actors, directors, writers, and especially fucking composers, when they bitch about being well known for horror, and then they're like, oh, but it's like low class, they want to do fucking dramas or something, and it makes me like and respect them less. Like I won't name names, okay, because if this was a Patreon episode, I would name fucking names. But
well I let me clarify, because I'm not saying like they're upset that they were pigeonholed. What I'm saying is, like, case in point was with Clerks. I know that one a little bit better than Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I know it was similar, was that a lot of the people who were in Clerks felt like, hey, we donated a lot of free time to help you and you become this multimillionaire, and we're just the schlops that like worked our asses off for your vision and got nothing in return. Like the guy who played Randall had to audition to play Randall in a Clerks live action movie and didn't get the job. Like it was just like shit like that, where it was just like, holy shit, like I quit my job to be in this movie for you, and now I'm fucking broke as shit and you're like on TV and I'm just still stuck in Jersey. Like, I think that there was like a little bit of that animosity of, because if you read about the filming of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that film set was hell.
Not to mention it was like a totally fucking volatile, like disgusting mess of a shoot.
Yeah, because they only had one shirt for Leatherface, so he had to wear the same blood-soaked shirt for a month and a half. They, you know, like all the animal carcasses were real animal carcasses in the movie.
Oh.
And they had to keep them in the house for months, and they couldn't move stuff for continuity. So they just said it's
fucking gross. Yeah.
And it was shot in the summer in Texas.
Yeah.
So I saw Confidential by Gunnar Hansen, if you ever get an opportunity to, because it's an amazing look at the making of the original Texas Chainsaw.
Did you say it's a book or a movie?
A book, Chainsaw Confidential. It's incredible.
I will read the shit out of that.
You really like it. It's a super easy read too. It's not like too heady or too detailed. It sounds like it's in Gunnar's voice too. It doesn't sound like it's, you know, made up. It's legit. It's a great book.
What I wanted to say though is that the worst part, I mean, I love what we've done in the last 4 years of this podcast. I've been a horror fan basically since I knew what horror was. And I never realized how obsessed I was with it until we started podcasting 7 years ago about it. Now I'm like, now I really feel it as a true part of myself instead of just being like, oh, this is something that I love. And going to cons is great. I love talking to other people about it. And I really do love meeting people that I idolized in movies that I watched growing up. But, and I said again, I will say it again, I don't want to name names, but some of the people that I have met, I've asked them really nice questions and they've been assholes and shitheads. Mm-hmm. and they take for granted the fact that you can do 50 amazing comedies and no one gives a fuck about meeting you in real life. You do one amazing horror movie, you do one horror movie that's not even that great, but it has a cult following, and you can make side cash going to like Texas Frightmare Weekend or Monster Mania, a movie that you made 30 fucking years ago, and people will adore the fact that they're getting to meet you in real life. People take it for granted, and it's just like there is no in the middle. There are people that are absolutely – like Felissa Rose, I will say, is one of the most intensely grateful people for her time in horror. And she still does it. She was in Victor Crowley a couple years ago. She's doing new stuff now. She's like – she absolutely has embraced the community. And that means a lot.
Shitty like situation. Like being her role in Sleepaway Camp could have – and. Could have like ended her career and put her in a really shitty place and all this stuff, but you're right.
Yeah,
the way that she embraces it is like a really beautiful and beneficial thing. Like it's beneficial if you embrace it. Like if you embrace it, you make that side cash. Like, you know, maybe that's what you're known for forever. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but now I just totally agree. It's like it's so difficult to see people not give a shit about their career or their past. I mean, yeah, you want to keep working for the future, but it's like if you just embrace what you had and what you did and how it makes people feel, like what's better than that?
But anyway, we are so off topic. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's a masterpiece. No.
No, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a masterpiece, Brian.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is.
Thanks for sticking with us, sorry. Brian. I know that you were just quiet for the last 10 minutes of me ranting.
Next Gen, also a really good movie. So what would your guys' double features be with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Next Generation?
Kyle, I want you to go first because I did this for you.
I would just pair it with the first one. I know that's not a cop-out. I don't feel that. I feel like there is a lot of compare and contrast that I've never done back and forth between. Like there are shots and stuff that I see and I just automatically know that it's from Texas Chainsaw, the first one. And it's like, there's things like that, but I would love to pair it with that. And I don't know which order I would do it though.
I think you should be first
the first third, one
or first then. Yeah. Fourth.
You have to because you would have everything from the first movie fresh in your brain to be on the lookout for stuff.
And I think that like this one will be like, cause if I'm watching it with other people, we'll have obviously a great time watching an absolute classic. And then because of the trajectory of what this one is and because of how crazy it is, I think, and how a lot of people don't like it and could think that it's not great. Like, I know it's not great, but I love watching it. So, like, I think we could have a fun time watching it with a bunch of people after we watch a bona fide classic, you know?
And people can leave if they want. Like, they don't feel like, oh, I got to stick through this to get
and
to the original.
I will say that there's a lot of just my final sort of note on this before, because I know we have to wrap up. But the thing about this movie is that this Leatherface was the first Leatherface I ever saw in my life. I saw this Leatherface on a VHS cover. I didn't know what Texas Chainsaw was. And if you've ever seen the cover of this one, in particular with the full drag Leatherface we're talking about here was in on the back. Yeah. It was like a two-sided cover. Cause on one was the lips with the chainsaw and on the other
the chainsaw,
drag Leatherface. And I was so confused. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know who that was. I was just so intrigued. And I had not watched the movie until pretty recently, like in the past probably 5 years, I had not seen the movie, but it was that when we talk VHS covers, I mean, everybody talks about artwork from the 80s and nostalgia for that stuff. This is more of my VHS cover that I remember that sticks with me, that intrigued me. There's ones that like scared me or whatever, but this one intrigued me like 100%. And I don't know if it meets any expectation that I had. It just never, I don't know what I ever thought of it besides being confused. But when people have nostalgia for things from the 80s, I don't get that a lot. I get like early 90s, mid 90s stuff. And this is one of them. And I think that this is why this sticks so much with me, because Leatherface and Texas Chainsaw is one of my, the original, one of my absolute favorites. Like
it's incredible. It's now my wife's favorite. Like it's a classic, as everybody says. And Leatherface is such an interesting character, and I love that this chapter exists because it just is off the fucking wall. I'd watch the first and this one as my double feature. I'd like to know what you guys think.
All right.
Since I picked it, I'm going to go next.
Yeah, I was going to say, you go next.
And this is a really – I've been doing this new thing where I plan my double features out in advance. So when I was watching this, I had this real weird flashback to Clive Barker's Lord of Illusions, because the Man in Black just had this weird feel about him that reminded me of that movie. And I was like, when did Lord of Illusions come out? It came out the same year as this, so I would just do a 1994 questionable horror movie back to back. I start with TCM Next Gen, and then I'd watch Lord of Illusions, which I don't remember it being a very good movie, but is that really ever is that really what I go for, you know?
So I'm gonna do a double feature of movies that wish that they were the Texas Chainsaw Massacre but super missed the mark. So this is going to be brutal for anybody who sits and watches it, but I'm going to follow this up with Serial Insane Clown Killer.
God damn it, Denise.
Wow.
All right, Brian, take us home.
So mine's going to piss Scott off, but at
is
first.
Is it House of a Thousand Corpses?
but you're going to have to hear me out.
Okay.
So I would pair this with Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, the reason for that is because I watched the first time I saw Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, and the first time I saw this, we're in pretty much the same scenario. So I was a young kid, I think like 10 maybe, and I would spend it was when my grandfather was sick, so I would spend time at his house with my mom, and we just got Comcast. My grandparents just got Comcast, and they had free movies, but like, it's not like now where like you're always going to get the new movies that come out eventually on Prime. Like back then, like you never got originals on the free movies. It was just like either unheard of movies or like sequels. And that was the first time in 1 week. And I watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Next Generation. And then I watched Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors. And
so
I thought,
why do you think that would offend me?
Because it is a phenomenal movie paired with a fart. This movie is a fart.
But here's the thing:
like Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Brian. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, Brian. I don't think that you remember or not, but I don't love Dream Warriors. I love Dokken Dream Warriors, but really, it comes down to Nightmare 1 is my favorite. Like, I will go back and watch Nightmare 1 any day. I will watch Dream Warriors when it comes up, and I will enjoy myself, but I won't seek it out.
Really? I thought Dream Warriors was number two for you.
I would watch Gay NOES before I watched Nightmare 3. I would here.
Really? See, Dream Warriors is like the second one to me.
Well, New Nightmare is the second one for me.
Really?
Yeah, I love New Nightmare because the thing about Nightmare on Elm Street 1, or the original, is that it actually scared me. And I was like 14 or 15 the first time I watched it because Freddy was literally my boogeyman growing up. I'd never seen the movies, but I just was horrified and obsessed with this concept of this man who lived in a furnace and could kill you. So in your dreams. So I felt like there was no safety because you have to sleep and he's a ghost. So and it's like I didn't know why he was killing kids because that's kind of a surprise in the movie, and so it's not like, you know, common knowledge to a 6-year-old, but so I remember seeing the face of New Nightmare Freddy and the hand glove conglomerate, and that Freddy scares me the most, more so than the original. I've rewatched it and like in the last year, and it still gives me that feeling of dread that I used to have when I would look at a picture of Freddy when I was 6. So yeah, it goes Nightmare 1, New Nightmare. Then I guess it goes Dream Warriors because it's really entertaining, but it's equal to Nightmare 2 because Nightmare 2 is just a really good fun time.
See, Nightmare 2 has like no rewatchability for me.
Oh, you have to rewatch it soon. Wait, yeah, I think you're missing out. It's more fun than you remember.
Yeah, it truly is.
Nightmare 2 and Freddy's Dead, like, it's been probably 7 or 8 years since I've seen them. But like,
oh, I remember, and Freddy's Dead is like a live action cartoon. I fucking love it. It's like watching Looney Tunes starring Freddy Krueger.
Is that the one where it says the map says we're fucked? That's yeah. I like that one. It's fun.
Has everybody seen all of the Texas Chainsaw movies?
I have not seen the new ones.
No, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen like the remakes, sequels, and prequels, but
I've seen all of them, unfortunately. which I think Leatherface is a good movie.
You think Leatherface, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, is a good movie?
Yes.
Are you talking about the one from like 1991 or 1990 or whatever it was?
Yeah.
It's surprisingly better than I remembered it being, Scott. But you have to watch the director's cut is definitely.
Oh, I've only ever seen the original or the
VHS release. I hate it.
Okay. But. So if you hate it, what Rob Zombie did to Michael Myers in Halloween, do not watch the prequel to Leatherface. It is like the worst. They put a twist.
Humanize
in
him
so much to the point that there is a potential romance to the movie. Like, it is so. And I remember finishing it and I was like, I wonder if it would have been a good movie on its own. Like, well, you know what I mean? Like a psycho serial killer that didn't become Leatherface. It's bad.
Do you think that they had a script sitting on a shelf and they just dusted it off and they reskinned it as a Leatherface movie?
Yeah, they did like the Die Hard with a Vengeance move where they're like, we can throw John McClane in this script called Simon Says.
I think that they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Kyle, you've seen it, right? Yeah. The one that takes place in the mental ward.
I didn't finish it. So, because I was actually really like, not offended, but I was like, I was displeased. I was like,
it gets worse unless you looked up the ending.
It gets it's mean, like unnecessarily mean the first half an hour. And I don't vibe with that. Like, if there's no reason to be mean or mean spirited, because I think of like, we just talked about this being mean spirited a little bit, but it's not it. But it's also like it bounces out with goofiness and homage and meta or whatever. You talk about like Silent Night, Deadly Night being mean-spirited, but there's a point to that movie being mean-spirited. This fucking thing, Leatherface, the most recent one, why? I was uncomfortable because it made me be like, what are these writers and filmmakers like thinking that Texas Chainsaw Massacre is? Like, what do they think this is?
Yeah, so just to give everyone a quick spoiler to save everyone from watching the movie, it takes place at the mental institution. There's a pretty boy, a girl, and then this big fucking Leatherface looking character the whole movie. The Leatherface character doesn't talk. He's just like this big WWF wrestler collecting a paycheck in a horror movie type deal. Movie goes on, blah, blah, blah. Then it turns out that the big scary guy is a fucking is not Leatherface. The pretty boy that's in love with this girl is Leatherface. His face gets destroyed, and now he's just out for a vengeance, and future has become Leatherface. Like, it is like so bad. It's so bad.
Oh God, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's why I asked you if you finished it, because I was like, it gets worse.
Now I have to finish it.
All right. So you guys may have noticed that we forgot to release a What Did We Watch this month. We're probably going to stop doing this. Yeah. Instead, we're going to go ahead and just do a little segment at the end of the episode of a quick recommend of something that we have seen this week, trying to stay a little bit positive after watching something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Next Generation.
Before we do that, Matthew McConaughey was in Ghosts of Girlfriends Past with Brecken Meyer, who was in Herbie Fully Loaded with Michael Keaton.
Wow.
All right. What was Michael Keaton in?
Beetlejuice. It was Beetlejuice.
So I'm going to do mine first. It's a quick shout out as well to a good friend of mine. And, he's a fan of the podcast, Derek Cranavelt, who used to do the Geekscape Games podcast. He has a brand new show called Xbox Game Passenger. It's a series where they randomly pick a game that's available for free on the Game Pass app, and they make them play it. And I joined him on the most recent episode. I played a horror walkthrough game called What Remains of Edith Finch. It was fine. I didn't know that like walk simulators were an actual thing, so I was very confused why there wasn't a whole lot of action going on in the game. But I was just walking around a house solving a mystery. So it was a fun game. Give that episode a listen. It should be out by the time this episode drops.
Well, I'll hop in and say Sabrina season 2 was the shit. So good. Better than season 1. Very satisfying. Very cool. Very sacrilegious. Loved it. Megan and I had an absolute ball watching season 2. I mean, it's the second half of season 1. I think it's called part 2. But you know what I'm talking about. It just came out recently. It's really good. Watch it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Is that your recommendation?
No. I liked it. The only thing that... So me and Joshua were talking about it. And the only thing that was kind of a letdown in season 2, which I'm glad that they did, you know? So, like, I'm torn. It was like they really expanded on the transgendered character. Which I'm sure is really cool for a transgendered kid to watch this and be represented. And I really wouldn't understand because I'm represented in everything. But like me and Joshua were talking in the first season about how like it's cool because they don't really disclose what it is. Joshua at Fright School for anyone that's confused, but like it's just a character that is different. That's being bullied. Like they don't expand on it. And he was, his vision for a future is to have movies and fucking TV shows where like there's gay characters and there's transgendered characters and they're just like the straight, they're not like the gay right. character or like the transgender character. Like they just exist there. There's no like in-depth story to them. And I know we're far from that, but it was cool that it was kind of like that. Like you kind of assume she was transgendered or at least like, you know, a little bit, possibly a lesbian. You didn't know, but like, it didn't matter. She was being bullied all the same. She was an outcast, but I thought that the way they did it was super topical. I fucking loved how dark and satanic this one got. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a great, great season. That's my take.
All right. Kyle, do you have your recommendation of something you've seen?
Yeah,
this week that you
loved? My co-director from Survival of the Film Freaks, Bill Fulkerson, and I we're doing our personalized film freak commentaries for people who contributed to the Indiegogo campaign, who chose to do a pirate commentary, and they got to subject us to a movie of their choosing, where we then have to do a commentary on that movie. We've watched a lot so far, but we still have like 16 more to do. But I went up and I saw two things. One of them being Neil Breen's Pass Through. I had never seen a Neil Breen film. And I don't, if you need to question why people make movies and how they make movies, and how certain movies get made, this dude, it does everything fully independently, and it is, I've never seen such trash. I've never seen anybody who's seen or heard of Neil Breen who's listening to this now and knows what I'm talking about. He is an enigma. I cannot explain what his movies are or what they're about. You just need to watch them. They aren't streaming. You have to buy or go through some awful means to get his movies, but when you buy one, he will send you a DVD-R in a paper sleeve for $30 so you can see his movie that he shot in the Las Vegas desert that makes no sense, that is edited horribly, that he is always the lead in, and it's unreal. It's unreal, so I am now going to watch all of his films. He also made a movie called Fateful Findings. He also made a movie called I Am Here, .. And they all have like these weird, they're not social undertones, believe me. They are over the moon.
Yeah.
And they just fall so flat. But holy shit, it's a very specific cult watch. And then for an enjoyable movie, I watched the pirate movie, and it was from 1982. It's a musical, and it is starring... hold on, I'll tell you right now. But anyway, that is sort of about pirates. It's based, Christy McNichol, yeah. who won the Razzie for it, even though she acted fine. It was just the movie is crazy. It's a giant musical that was set, that was filmed in Australia in 1982. It takes some of the music of Pirates of Penzance, and then it sort of takes its own original music. There is a just to really reel you in. There's a part called Blowin' and Pumpin', where the main character, Christopher Atkins, dives deep sea dives into the ocean to find a treasure chest, and there are animated fish dancing around him as they're singing to the song "Blowing and Pumping," and it's beautiful. I had a blast watching it. Bill hated it. I would recommend seeking it out if you can. I don't believe it's available on DVD or Blu-ray, but there's or in at least in the States. But there are some rips around, and you need to see it. It's great.
So that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation from 1994, as picked by Scott. We were joined by our good friend Kyle, who is the co-director of Survival of the Film Freaks, which Indiegogo campaign wrapped up. You should be able to get your own copy of it in the near future, so stay tuned to their Facebook page for more information on that. Also, if you go on our Patreon, patreon.com/HMNpodcast, we're going to have a quick little talk with Kyle about another project that he worked on, starring your boys, The Horror Movie Night. So if you want to know what we've been doing behind the scenes, go to Patreon, find out. Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook and all of our social media. And tune in next week for another movie that will have you laughing in the dark.
Ooh.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.